Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Fuzzy Fractal 42.
Anyway, topic, guys?
Nah.
No.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 168. I'm your guest host today, Andrew. I'm here with Dan Q.
No 2 days are quite the same. Life is just a learning game.
Mad Jin.
My coffee is good. Make your own coffee.
Makalua.
Everybody's teasing me. I don't have a cup of coffee yet.
And the Mian Team.
Heads up. I'm engaging the spam cannon.
Is that what you're calling it these days?
What do you want me to call it, Mackie? Speaking
know.
Of spam cannon, it looks like I'm up first, which means you guys are going to have to listen to mine a little bit longer. This thread is on propaganda started by Raspberry on the 2K forum. Yes. Just a little idea for the Civ 5 that's been sitting in my head for a while. Obviously not balanced yet, but just wanted to dump it all out here. I love this spam cannon theme.
Yeah.
All right. Propaganda system accumulates naturally over time, can accumulate faster by building certain structures like radio towers. Increases combat capabilities of all units. That sounds extra fun. Raises happiness by a small amount. Can spend some accumulated points on the science, production, or military bonus, sort of like a mini Golden Age. Significant amounts of propaganda can be expended to adopt a permanent trait that benefits a certain aspect of your military, production, or research.
Eh.
If propaganda is high, a city captured by the enemy will produce more unhappiness.
Oh.
An extremely unhappy populace will grow more unhappy as propaganda-producing structures are built, spreads religion faster within one's own empire.
Uh-huh.
Adopting the entire piety tree gives a bonus to propaganda accumulation. So basically, propaganda can do everything.
Yeah. An extremely unhappy populace will only grow more unhappy. Hey, welcome to the spiral of death.
You lose. Like, the idea of propaganda is not bad, but the idea of making propaganda do almost everything possible in the game to help or hinder or screw others and your own is not so good. I would like to see you have to invest some resources into spreading propaganda of a certain nature that then has a certain effect. If you're going to implicate something like this, I mean, it's probably mod territory since it's a little bit on... If you compare the scale of Civ where multiple years pass per turn most of the time, it really doesn't fit the scale of Civ. But if you want to put a mod for it, I would definitely recommend, okay, you invest in this propaganda... And what kind of propaganda has an influence on its effects? Because, you know, this kind of stuff is a little bit ridiculous.
Mm. I like how this is a first post.
Yeah.
They can remove all the science stuff. Yeah, like we need more reasons or more ways to get extra science.
Well, what's the basis? Like what prompted him to believe, or her, to believe that propaganda leads to science? And usually propaganda has a very specific purpose. It's to get your people to believe one way or another.
Well, it sort of sounds like, you build these, you spend a propaganda to get certain buildings, and then those buildings give you a boost to one of those. So you can, it sounds kind of like, you can go in one of three directions, or maybe more if you want to extend it, by taking propaganda and focusing your empire on one of something. But that always leads to tech, because tech wins out. because of the way the game's built, tech always wins. I like the, if propaganda is high, a city captured by the enemy will produce more unhappiness. If your people love your leader, then somebody else taking your land will make them not like the other person more.
I don't like this accumulates naturally over time. That's not how propaganda works.
Yeah.
Usually it's a very concerted effort by the people spreading the propaganda that requires a significant investment of manpower and or capital in order to get this message out to as many people as possible. It's not something you just accumulate over time.
Yeah, I would just delete that line and then go to the second line going, can accumulate, delete
okay, that's true.
By building certain structures. That part would be okay.
The last two parts about spreads religion faster within one's own empire and adopting the entire piety tree, giving a bonus to propaganda accumulation. Let's aside for a moment the real-life controversy that comes with such a statement. In terms of a gameplay purpose, we've talked before, and we've seen before, if you've played Civilization V Gods and Kings, that as the espionage system is introduced, religion is still there, but it's not at the forefront as it once was. Perhaps propaganda might be a way to give a boost to the espionage system. So it is something that you are actually having to do. It's not just being accumulated over time just because. It's a function of your spies.
Actually, you could tie it to both, because that's kind of how propaganda worked in a way. Like, originally it was used with religious themes historically, and then it's kind of gone over to more of an espionage focus in reality. I mean, we're really oversimplifying things in me saying this, but that is kind of how it worked. Like, look at the basis for the war in the Crusades versus the basis for some of the wars now. Less religion-focused. Not entirely non-religion-focused, but less so than it used to be.
Every war in existence is always religion-focused.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Speaking of controversy,
I think the Mongols would say, we're more comfortable to the Mongol reasons than the reasons for the Crusades.
Please send all hate mail too.
For the next episode of Politicast,
religious and espionage-based propaganda systems, and it would be valid from a historical perspective.
It would be valid, but I do like Dan's tie into the espionage side.
Yeah, I do too.
Because obviously spies good at spreading propaganda. Otherwise, as Artifex replied, this is overall, this sounds good. This sounds to me like an expanded culture system rather than a completely new separate resource, which is possible, but I'm not sure I would use propaganda rather than culture. Propaganda in a system would be okay, I guess. I'm not really sure about, like, the breadth of it, because if you have something that's so big that it affects absolutely every part of the game, then if you don't focus on propaganda, you're probably going to get wiped out.
Yeah.
Well, especially that whole, we have high propaganda and now we're going to make you mad. Even more. We'll mess your people up.
Why are you mad, bro?
Yeah.
That would be hilarious in, like, player versus player and practically useless against the AI on any level where you would need it whatsoever.
Like, how to win the game? High propaganda. Everybody else is so unhappy they can't fight, and they always have rebels showing up. I win.
Can't grow, can't tech, can't do anything. Everyone's just pissed off. Impact that it would have would need to be more than just balanced a little bit, but it could work.
Endrimner has come up with an idea, a new sort of tech tree for future games, a suggestion to introduce unique tech trees. Not necessarily fully unique, the tech tree would be the tech tree, but the too long didn't read summary is basically to use high-level tech tree to, like, sort of like what we have right now, where you go through different techs and you have to go through, you know, the high-level side, and then you would specialize within techs if you so choose, so that, say, you get bronze working, that's just a high-level tech, and you might get some sort of bonus just for researching it. But to build a spearman, you would have to spend more research to actually research the spearman. Or on the other side, if you want culture or whatever, you can spend the time to build the Colossus. So basically, the concept he's going for is that every tech has some peaceful applications and some military applications and other applications, whatever. So it just basically wants to not let everybody just hit a tech and get absolutely everything in that tech, but actually take some time to focus. So if you don't really want to do early wars, then you can burn your way through some of the early techs, but then focus, say, on the culture buildings and everything else. And it also would prevent silly things like the AI just building every single world wonder just because they happen to have gotten the tech, not because they actually need it or want it, and other such things. It's a really long post, and I think that's about the sum of it. I like the idea. It's actually it's very similar to what I've suggested before, or at least have been thinking about before as well. I like the idea of basically not having to get everything when you hit attack, but being able to basically specialize into little things is very similar to what he's going for here. And it would work fairly well. It is somewhat similar to some other game styles where you hit something big and then you have to dig into them to get
this. Yeah, but I think this mechanic could actually add to any of the Civ titles, at least that I've played in recent memory.
Yeah.
Including 5, but not limited to.
So, yeah, I would actually definitely agree with the concept. I mean, Civ 5's tech tree is pretty crap, at least in the design. Civ 4 had the better tech tree because you could at least jump from one side of the tech tree to another with requirements. But at least with this, you could slide out different directions as you need. I like it.
There's also a focus on the now part aspect, where you can use like aspects of your current technologies by digging deeper into them to get something, or you can try to reach, but you'll temporarily be weaker as a result of it, and I like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's always balance. If you skip the military tech, but somebody comes along and grabs, say, spearmen, and you decide to jump to swordsmen, well, you better hope that you have the time to get into swordsmen before the spearmen show up.
Yes.
Or if you're going some other way. So, yeah, all the special stuff and all the wonders and everything else come from not just hitting the tech, but actually researching them within the tech.
I really like it. I like the strategy aspect that would add to the game and the diversity.
Yeah, and it would provide some uniqueness. And it would prevent certain situations like architecture in Civ 5 where it's just like a couple wonders. So
yeah, what's the point of researching that? It's only because I have to have other things past architecture that I ever research that.
And so if those wonders are already gone, you don't waste your time. And that would actually work in this system as well. Since you have to research for the particular wonder or, say, the particular building, if you don't have it, well, then you just skip it for the forge. So if you don't have the iron sitting around, then you don't bother researching a forge. You just keep going, since forges boost iron tiles and all that.
I like the suggestion as well towards what's already been said, but just even in more general, the ability to adapt to your particular circumstances, just another measure as a human player, again, to be able to adapt. So if you think you're going down one particular path, let's go culture. Okay, I want to focus on culture. Oh, but now I've got to backtrack and get this military technology so I can continue down the culture path. Really, you're going to bottleneck me? Oh, my gosh. Just to try to avoid that. And then, yes, I am going to raise this requisite point because it's just naturally that it comes up, especially in a single player. The artificial intelligence, of course, would need to be able to use this. I'm not going to say extremely well or very well. That might be a bit of a high threshold. I'll just go with competently. I think that can be a function. In fact, that might be the biggest obstacle.
Actually, it's easy to get them to do it. Because all you have to do is, like, so say you have the node like he's got in the picture where, say, Bronzeworking has 4 different nodes to it. You just sum the value of those nodes and just do a node edge graph for it. And so if it's going cultural, when it hits the tech, which will have the sum of all the nodes to it, it'll then look at does it keep going forward? So does the waiting edge weight want it to lead forward, or does it need that wonder? And therefore the waiting on the nodes within the tech would let you do it. So there is ways to do it fairly effectively. Just because Civ and the developers don't necessarily know how to do that very effectively doesn't mean it can't be done.
Well, you're saying the AI is competent anyway, but it really...
Oh,
it isn't. Without its bonuses, it's a joke. So, I mean, that's really not a barrier in any mechanical sense for a Civ game. The AI is terrible, and we all know it, so...
Well, it's not bad at some things. Digging through a tree is not hard for the AI, or to build as an AI. All you have to do is dig through a tree. Can even extend it and use different concepts, like you don't have to go from one high-level tech to another high-level tech always. Sometimes maybe there's alternate paths or other such things, depending on what you've done. Or even maybe some of these sub-paths lead into techs, so that maybe you have to go through the cultural side, say in this Bronzeworking to sculptures to wonders, as he wrote out here, and that leads to a different culture tech or some other tech rather than the main path. That could be a more interesting way of being able to wander through the tech tree.
How I Learned That I Suck at Civilization beat. No, not written by me. Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I thought it was.
I know it sounds like something that I would say and think, you know, every 5 or 6 seconds, but it's not. This comes from Kotaku's Mike Rogow, and I think this article may have been titled something differently, because if you look at the address, it doesn't say how I learned that I suck at Civilization with hyphens in between each word. No, it's three attempts at bending Civ 5 to my will, which didn't go very well, which I actually kind of prefer that title. It's a little specific.
Well, in the standard general way of things, the URL just goes based on the name, and somebody at Kotaku probably went, dude, that is not a good title. Let's sum it up. You suck.
Quite possible. He writes that I've never played Civilization V prior to last week, and this article was published in early March, March the 1st or something like that. Not to any meaningful degree, at least, okay? He talks about he was a toddler when the original Civilization had computers in 1991. He couldn't go from the fast-paced kitty-crack, quote-unquote, like Sonic, to the massive slow-paced strategy title like Civ. He said it would have been like putting Power Rangers and Mad Men back-to-back on Fox Kids.
That would do much more for the society.
I like that. Okay.
It's actually not a bad idea.
But then he says, I can keep making excuses if you like, but the fact is the closest I had come to playing a Civ game by the time Sid Meier and Company designed to bestow Civ 5 upon the world was starting a game of The Sims once.
Yeah, not even close.
Let me tell you, Mike, that's like saying the closest one ever got to driving a car was taking a pogo stick out of its box.
Yep.
That's terrible, terrible, terrible. But
and yet it still might be the truth. I mean, if that's all you've ever done is gone on a pogo stick, then there you go. It is the closest.
It is a mode of transportation.
Yeah.
It's not a very good one.
But you see, in my analogy here, it doesn't actually say he actually uses the pogo stick, though, because he just took it out of the box. Because he said he started a game of The Sims once. It didn't say he actually really played the game.
Yeah, so basically did play it, though, because he started it.
Just because you start something doesn't mean you finished.
It does in the case of Sims, though.
Yeah.
I turned it on. I'm done.
Oh, hate mail.
I don't think we're going to get a lot of hate mail. I don't think our demographic crosses over with Sims that much. We'll get a piece or two.
You don't have a Venn diagram thing going on here with an overlap in the middle between the...
There's a Venn diagram, but there's not much of an overlap.
He says, but this industry being what it is, I began to feel left out of my own indifference to the strategy genre. I'm thinking, okay, I'm not quite certain where you're going with this, but I'll keep reading. Here's the thing that millions of people are going wild over, and I'm just sitting here playing shooters and RPGs, and now I'm thinking like, oh, what, like tens or maybe hundreds of millions of others are doing? I don't really see how this is really making you look bad necessarily for not really playing Civilization yet, but anyway.
It makes them look really bad.
I purposely grabbed Civ 5 on Steam and dove in. Little did I know how engrossing I'd find it. But 9 hours into my first play session, as the sun began to rise, it occurred to me that I hadn't really known. Oh.
Just one more turn.
You are not the first, and you will not be the last. You are not special.
Huh. Way to make him feel good about himself.
Well, he already feels badly about himself. Remember how I learned I suck at Civilization. So this, anyway. I was relieved to see so many tutorials on the main menu. I started to cringe here. If the learn-as-you-play option caught my eye, there's no better teaching than doing, right? So, the tutorial began like I would soon discover most games do. You settle a city, set your warriors scurrying about, and good luck with those bandits.
Yeah.
And then, perhaps this sentence here, is this game not about conquering everything in sight indiscriminately? I was going to have to adjust my expectations, or not.
I like the other line. If it didn't want to be about pillaging, I was going to make it about pillaging. That sounds like a good style.
So he talks about meeting Genghis Khan, and he went ahead and publicly denounced Genghis. The man's a monster after all, quote-unquote. Instead of drawing his sword, though, he did his best jilted lover impression and pouted at me. I thought this dude was supposed to be hardcore. What gives? So, quote unquote. So he decided to go one step further and declared war on the Mongol immediately.
There you go. That's the proper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So far, I learned that Civ 5 was not exactly what I had expected, and that the tutorial difficulty was probably going to be pretty boring. You know what? I think boring might be something to aspire to at the tutorial level. But anyway, I quit without saving. Oh, well, you probably did save. You should check your autosaves if they haven't been overwritten by now. He quit without manually saving anyway, and resolved to buckle down and do the tutorials one by one.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Mike, the fact that you persevered through the tutorials one by one, you stuck through it to an hour, and then decided to play another game, I will silently clap to you for that.
I mean, you do get an achievement for completing all the tutorials, I believe, so there's that.
Yeah. Bad.
Is that really an achievement?
I believe so. I don't know.
You've achieved something, losing your sleep, maybe.
Yeah. You just wasted a bunch of time, but whatever.
Achievement in games have kind of done like what Facebook has done to the word friend. It's kind of diluted the meaning of the word, but anyway, that's a whole side discussion. I didn't care what the game wanted me to do, quote unquote.
Okay. That's all right, yep.
Still playing on the tutorial difficulty. Sue me. Oh, don't tempt people. I was building as many cities as possible to fuel my future war machine. Uh-huh. He was swallowing up city-states like greasy hot dogs on the 4th of July. Well, I like literary...
You have some good lines in this. He really does.
It's an enjoyable read. It is an enjoyable read. When it came time to topple empires, Songhai came first because it was the closest.
Oh, yeah. I know that method.
We can all relate to that.
Yes.
Tried to get Catherine of Russia and her needlessly revealing dress.
Not needless.
Needlessly, if there's a slit down the front.
Tried to declare to get war against the Songhai, but she refused despite all of his gifts of gold, so naturally Russia was next.
Yeah.
Keep the Siamese Empire intact a bit longer out of loyalty from my days spent wearing his flip-flops in the last game. Oh, that's misguided, but anyway. The next sentence. I couldn't figure out how to cross the ocean. So I guess he's across the ocean, so I suppose that might necessitate you deciding you're going to keep it intact out of loyalty. That's what loyalty means. Not quite certain how to cross the ocean.
I can't find where you are to punch your face in, so you get to live.
But through a strange mix of guns and swords, quote-unquote, Siamese did fall, and then Genghis Khan's Mongolian forces, taking up arms against Gandhi was dirty business, but after 300 some turns, it was over. The world was mined. And then he thought, maybe playing on the easiest possible setting did not really give me a representative experience here.
Nope.
Yeah, just a little.
This took you a second attempt to figure that out. Oh, okay, okay. Attempt number three, don't kill them all. He said it was at this point he realized I had absolutely no idea how to win if not by the sword. He encountered Persia. He tried to gain their favor. Gifts, treaties, declaration of friendships, all refused. So then he decided, of course, I'm going to take out Persia. I'm going to conquer this continent. Quote, then I totally be friends with everybody else I met and get elected head of the United Nations. It was the perfect plan, quote unquote. Well, the best of plans, and I'm not certain that was the best of plans, but even then, well, the thing is, he didn't account that Persia had been creating a hell of an army, quote unquote. So out of the midst strode my savior. It's Gandhi. Sorry, I just destroyed your empire in my last game. No hard feelings, right? Now it's time to declare a joint war against Russia, since we're good friends and all. And he declined. How about 500 gold? No. And so then, at this point, it's when Mike says, well, shit. And he says, what did I learn from all of these experiences that I suck at Civilization? And I think it's not so much that you suck at the game, but your approach to the game and your thinking kind of set you up, not so much for failure, but a lot of difficulties.
It almost seems to me like you wrote the article intending to suck at Civilization. Like, you played it intending to write this article about sucking at it. You know, like, he didn't really try. He meant to suck.
Quite possible. And most people in the comments at Kotaku were not sympathetic. AXC 2012 says, if you don't think about your choices at all and just herp derp it, of course you will suck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Handsome Costas said that he was not a real gamer because he played Mario and didn't know about Civ. I think that's a bit of a stretch. But Smudges says, you suck at Civilization because you have the attention span of a chipmunk. I'd stick to smart games like Call of Duty if I were you. Oh.
That's harsh.
Yeah.
You really found a game that didn't work with that suggestion. Jeez.
Octopus Soup said, I think Mike is a great example of his generation. A lot of stuff was made for quick results. No in-depth story, very little reward for investing time. It's not his fault. I'm not even sure what is. If we just say, well, you're a symptom or a product of your generation, that is a bit fatalistic, although certainly the instant gratification that you can get from a lot of games that are not strategy, if you then try to approach Civ in that fashion, thinking you're going to get a similar experience, then I understand that. He also doesn't clarify, but I think he may just be playing Civ 5 vanilla. I don't know. I mean, he makes no reference to religion or espionage. It might just be that he really didn't get into that. It wasn't noteworthy. So I don't know if he was playing with 10 kings or, you know. And I think that would alter when you're talking about Civ 5. And as much as I've come to like Civ 5, I'm not really certain if you've decided to play Civ for the first time, if Civ 5 was necessarily first Civ game to start with.
I think he would have come up with a really asinine religion if he had managed to found one, or he would have mentioned a religion of some variety. Yeah, this is interesting, though, this instant gratification thing. There is actual neurological differences between the generations because of the way information is presented to them while learning. Like, that's been shown to be true, and so people's preferences for games can literally change because of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you suck at something, you're not going to want to continue playing it.
Well, just don't have the attention span for it anymore. Yeah. You expect information faster.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that in a different episode, how we're all not as patient as we used to be with games.
Yeah.
So we are in our heads changing. It's not just generational.
That's true. Although most of us watching this or doing this or listening to this are still within the age range where, you know, we grew up with technology to some extent, and that kind of developed. Certainly for other generations, it's just neurologically different. You have different expectations when you're loading a web page. You'll wait longer before you want to click off of it. That's all been documented. And that's a problem in games, too. And I feel like I'm one of the kids when it comes to this, even though I'm not that young anymore, because I'm very impatient with things. If I give a command, I want to be able to give another command. I don't want to wait. So probably on the bad end of the spectrum in that regard. But it's certainly true. It's been demonstrated multiple times. It's interesting research, if those of you guys listening want to get into it. Obviously, it's well beyond the scope of a Civ show, but yeah.
The Hay and Kotaku, I think perhaps even reasonably well summarizes what I would say back to Mike here, which is the best way to get good at Civ 5 is to keep playing it. Over time, the game's mechanics will become more familiar, and once you understand the game's sheer depth, it will become a blast to play. And I said almost because I'm with you up until necessarily about the point it will become a blast to play. It depends on what you think of the game mechanics individually and overall and combined, and what you regard in terms of the game's sheer depth. And to Phil's point about wanting to give a command and not having to wait, that you want it to be instant, that you're not patient, it's one of those things where if you are patient, what is the reward? If you're waiting for something to happen, is there a dividend? And what you decide is an appropriate return on investment for your time, in addition to your money, of course. I mean, you're paying for the game. Think about all the hours you play a particular game, and sometimes you go back and think, could I have been doing something more productive with my time? Well, the answer is probably if it comes to games. But at the same time, in those moments, were you enjoying that? Did you feel like that the effort and the slog, that it was worth something, that you now have a greater appreciation for the game, and it's something that you can go back to either regularly or time and time again and have fun? This is not about your job, for example. It's not about, you know, your education before that. It's not even about a relationship with somebody else. It's, are you enjoying what it is that you're doing? And if Mike decided after this Civ 5 experience not to play Civ again, I wouldn't blame him, or at least not play Civ 5 again. Although I think, as we've also gone over, the way that he approached even the multiple attempts, I don't think he really necessarily learned as much between each attempt. Like, he was doing his research, that's fine, but then once you have that research, how does it apply to your particular game and being able to adapt to it?
Okay,
Dan, nice speech.
Recorded for episode 163 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, and Smallfish. a single-player game for myself. I find myself as Siam and surrounded by lots of desert, so you know what pantheon I took.
Dance of the Aurora. No.
Yay! We've all misclicked on that, and in single-player, that's why it benefits you to save often. But I didn't misclick this game, unfortunately. Sorry to disappoint Mackie. It's a standard-sized map. It was Pangaea. There was one AI on my side of the continent. The other five are off in the corner. And he's wandering around still with archers and warriors when I met composite bowmen and swords. So I go and I take that person out. I increase my faith more from Desert Folklore because I expand into more cities, and he had some desert terrain. And, you know, getting my shrines built up. And so I initially take, I can't remember the names of the beliefs afterward that came afterwards that increased happiness. But I decided, since I was aggressively getting the faith accumulation, and that's, of course, exponential to getting my first great profit and then subsequent great profits, I decided to not only take the belief that allows me to build mosques, but also pagodas. And I've got this huge amount of land that's open to me, and so I settle cities. And I'm now, you know, I'm at 50, 60 faith a turn, so, you know, in a few turns, oh, let's buy a mosque, let's buy a pagoda. Okay, let's settle another city. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I'm now at over 100 faith, 150 faith, 200 faith, and finally the AI, the Ottomans and the English decide, enough of this crap, and they declare on me a naval invasion, and all of my units are land-based, and they're on the other side of the empire. But, you know, I'm trading for gold, and so I'm buying some units appropriately timed and getting up my infrastructure, you know, with walls and castles at that point to help bombard those units. And I've got cannons by this point, and pretty soon artillery show up. Yes, they do take one city of mine for a few turns, but it was a kind of a crap city, and get it back, and I wipe out their naval invasion, and then they sue for peace, and I get a whole bunch of gold and a whole bunch of gold per turn and their resources, which I use for more happy. And in this game, I have territory that covers more than 4 million square kilometers.
Ooh.
Shiny.
Still smaller than Canada.
And your point is, that's real life. This is not real life magic. Have you not seen?
Yes, it is. We're playing with different worlds. There are people on these worlds. Every time you screw up, a whole civilization dies.
You managed to say that like you cared.
Yeah.
They're just pixels, imagine. They don't feel anything yet.
Yet.
So, my turn?
Sure.
Whatever. It is,
well, I was trying this new map type, the King of Gods and Kings. It's called Frontier. Specifically, Frontier, large continents with low sea level. And it's unbelievably huge, even with standard settings. I had, like, a really huge continent with just, to me, Dido and Haile Selassie. I did a lot of things like randomly declared war because I was playing as Pachacuti, and I remembered Matt DeGin's Deity Rome series that Pachacuti was randomly declaring war on everybody. So I just thought, hey, maybe that's a great idea too. So I just declared war on everybody, and then eventually I racked up all those gold deals. But the most interesting part was like when I met everyone else on the other continent. One of them had their own continent to himself. It was Tiawata. And at one point in time, because there was like a lot of unsettled space on my own continent, settled like 4 spammy cities in the south near Haile Selassie. And so at one point he wanted to attack them. But I know that he just messed a lot, because when I came into his home island and just bombarded with frigates, there were only like 2 or 3 riflemen and a lancer and a Gatling gun. That was it. I took his capital.
So it was Hiawatha that had committed the bulk of his troops to those 4 or 5 spammy cities near Ethiopia that was on your continent?
Yep.
And you were able to take his homeland?
Pretty much.
Ah.
All his homeland belonged to you.
Yeah. I remember later on I was wonder racing with Monty, who started off on a really huge jungle continent with Harald Bluetooth. It ended quite badly for Harald. Anyways, he was like kind of like the pack leader. He was building a Statue of Liberty in his very, very hammer-poor capital. And he was still 10 turns to my 10-10 Statue of Liberty in Cusco. So I tried to take the odds against him by rush buying a factory, stuffing it, and then even had workers chopping down wood. And at the end of the 10 turns, Monty completes the Statue of Liberty. I mean, what? Seriously?
Yeah, the AI sometimes doesn't take its particular circumstances into account very well. Was there another city in his empire that would have been better, that was better hammer capable, that he should have been building it somewhere else, or was it just that that was the best and it was still crap and he shouldn't have bothered?
At that point, I didn't really explore his interior, which was really huge, but he was spamming also a ton of cities. Unlike the usual Monty who likes to take autocracy, he surprisingly took order this game.
Did you have random personalities on, or was it just one of those things?
It was just one of those things. No random personalities at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, amazing.
I mean, I know that's never a guarantee of behavior, but still, that is surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Soren Johnson joins Stardock, quote-unquote, at least for a while, although it depends on how you define joins. In his March developer journal for Fallen Enchantress Elemental, the chief executive officer of Stardock, Brad Wardell, and his nickname is Frogboy, not that you often see or hear about that anymore, noted that another former Civilization developer and Firaxis Games alumni had established an association with the company. That is, Civilization IV designer Soren Johnson has been brought on board, at least for a while, to oversee the design of all of our games, quote-unquote. We noted before, back in episode 166, about Civilization V designer John Tripp Schaefer having left Stardock to form his own game studio, and its premier title, which, in conclusion, by the way, of that, he got more than $100,000 for At the Gates of the Kickstarter campaign, double the initial $40,000 goal. Derek Kale Paxton, known for his extensive and immensely popular Civilization IV mod series Fall from Heaven, oversees Stardock's game studio and has crazy amounts of work on his plate, according to Wardell. I kind of like this point that was kind of thrown in the mix. Though he's the CEO of Stardock, Wardell is also the lead programmer of the company's game studio, which makes Paxton his boss in that role. Yeah. But Wardell doesn't like designing games, and again, he's the CEO of the parent company, so this combined with John's departure and Kale's attention committed elsewhere led to the hiring of Johnson, concluding, I think his impact on our upcoming, think 2014, 15, 16, will be pretty obvious. Now, according to an update on Joystick's news item on Johnson's involvement with Stardock, a company representative has clarified with them that Johnson is only working as a consultant at the developer and is not on staff. Johnson has turned in and contacted by Joystick for clarification of where this leaves him with respect to Zynga, because he had been the design director at the East Coast headquarters since September 2011, but it was reported that the last Monday in February, Gamma Sutra among them, that that office was closed as part of Zynga's cost-cutting restructuring efforts, which we also talked about in episode 166.
Random point. Jordan Mallory, learn your Civ titles. Why am I looking at a picture of Civ 5 Nebuchadnezzar when you're talking about Soren Johnson or Stardock?
Because Nebuchadnezzar looks boss, I guess.
Maybe he's similar to the appearance of Soren Johnson.
Ooh. No, there's a picture there somewhere, I swear.
I know that's not the case. There's really no reason.
Yeah, up until now, Johnson not pictured above. Really, it's not even Civ 4 picture. It's like Soren Johnson, who may remember as Civ 4 lead designer, but we'll screw you over by actually giving you a picture of Civ 5.
Here's a picture of a chess set and a tomato.
Yeah.
Soren Johnson is not pictured above.
Yeah, exactly. This is a tomato. It is not Soren Johnson. Well, thanks for saying that.
So, the new Derp Award goes to Jordan Mallory, but the old Derp Award goes to Gaming Guide's Camu Hai, who refers to Civilization IV as a beloved real-time strategy title.
Yes.
Unless he meant multiplayer, in which case he had some justification, but not much.
As for Soren, he's consulting. So there's still hope that he'll do something useful.
Check in the chat here. Candace says, not everyone has a natural filter for important data. Well, some people just don't have filters at all. Oh, wait, that's a separate...
Speaking about filtering out unimportant data...
There you go.
Let's rank the Civ games. That's the worst.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So there's this article again on Kotaku, someplace.
Kotaku.
And I am place that my brain just refused to use the right pronunciation.
I am happy that the picture at the top is Gandhi threatening you with nuclear weapons.
Yep.
We're to back to nuclear weapons.
Luke Plunkett, different person on Kotaku, but whatever. Actually has a pecking order series, apparently. But he wanted to very quickly and cleanly rank the Civ games on how good they are against each other. Only the primary Civ titles are being included. That's useful. Otherwise, this might actually be a slightly longer list. So that explains why Colonization... Well, okay, Colonization is not Civilization, people. It was never part of the Civilization series. It was its own standalone game and had nothing to do with Civ.
That is true. The original.
Me too. It's also why Alpha Centauri and Civ Rev are also missing.
And, of course, also excluded from the list are the Call to Power titles.
Yeah. He said this list was hard enough as it was only dealing with 5 main titles. So, let's start at the bottom.
Yep.
Because we have to do that.
Obviously.
It's not in the contract, but I felt like doing it anyway.
It should be in the contract. Good point. All amended right now.
Okay. So, at number 5, he puts in Civ 2.
Wait, what?
Yeah. That's what I said. I'm like,
why is that not Civ 3? That
wait.
Be the bottom.
It gets better. His explanation for why it's last.
Just wait for it. Like, sorry, Civ 2. You were, and in many ways still are, an awesome game. Really. But somebody had to come last, and that somebody is you. Well, if you're going to use that logic, I've got a couple other Civ titles for you.
You know what I think just happened? I think Civ 2 just got random number generated luck screwed.
Yeah, I think so too. They lost it 100% odds.
This is why I hate list-based articles in general. You know, you can make a list out of anything, but it's BS, basically.
I think I would be less annoyed if he just had Civilization 2 as number 5 and then didn't provide this air quote explanation as to why Civilization 2 was number 5.
Yeah.
Because then I could have had some hope in my mind that he actually had some reasonable basis for why Civ 2 should be last as opposed to, oh, I really haven't given you much thought yet. Here, I'll just put you at the end. We're done.
It was a straight upgrade of Civ 1. They're mechanically very similar.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem.
But it's a better game. If you're ranking them without era adjusting them, and clearly he is, then you can't justify this.
Well, Civ 2 brought in some new mechanics, and there's mechanics in Civ 2 that people really, really like. And I would think that most fans would consider Civ 2 better than number 5 because it wasn't just a straight upgrade. But whatever. Along that, if you consider it only a nicer-looking version of Civ, then at number 4, we have Civilization. So for the first one. Basically, if you think that the Civ 2 is just a cleaner upper of the game and was just released to make it look prettier, then the original game, of course, is more important because that's where all the stuff is. Thinking Riders Marching in the Street, or even better, the diplomacy system where you get to see medieval rulers in modern business suits. That stuff was great. I miss that. Actually, I think a lot of people miss the business suits.
Lincoln in a toga.
Yeah. That was awesome. At number 3, so I think he's doing this on purpose, Civ 3. wrong, your list sucks.
Speaking of wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know why you guys hate Civ 3 quite so much. Honestly.
No, I actually liked it. Really weird.
You had fun at the time, but there were some things that were just so frustrating.
He says, it implemented religion and more important national borders for the first time and did an admirable job of it. Are you trying to bleep me? Is that just...
No. His part about implementing religion.
It was wrong?
It's not in Civ 3. That was Civ 4.
Yeah, that was Civ 4 with religion.
Yeah. So he's just wrong.
That's right. That's wrong.
So Dan's been trying to bleep me every time I say religion.
No, just here with Civ 3. When you said Civ 3 implemented religion, I had to buzz that out as soon as you said it.
I know a lot of people who still think this is the best game in the series.
Who are these people?
Probably his 7 cats. They think it's still the best.
He says you can almost look at it as the pinnacle of early Civ games. Well, it was the 3rd one. So at the time, sure, it was.
If you define early Civ games as the first 3 major Civ titles, then Civ 3 is in fact the pinnacle of the early Civ games.
Yeah, perfection of the formula laid out by Sid Meier's original before 4 and especially 5 started rolling up their sleeves and really messing with stuff. okay, if you think 3 is better than 2 and 1 because, well, it's the same, just better, and then 4 and 5 are different.
It has a better map editor, too, incidentally.
Yes. Civ 3 had the better map editor. And it was also where Civ multiplayer started kicking in.
Yeah, so,
meaningfully.
Yeah, I did actually play Civ 3 quite a bit back in the day.
Played it a little.
It was nice. It was decent. It wasn't like Civ 5, which apparently is number 2 on his list.
I can't argue with that too much. I mean, Civ 4 is still a lot of fun. I mean, Civ 5 has good things about it, but Civ 4 still has good things about it. And I think he points this out when he talks about Civ 4, that how big and how awesome the modding community is for it.
Okay, well, let's get there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Civ 5, he says, in many ways, this should be number 1. Why? Because I think the way he was ranking them was, is this the latest version of it? Yes, that should be the higher number.
Yeah, you
can. That's the way he's mostly going with this one.
Theory, that's how games should be made.
Should be. The way units are arranged on the map was a revolution and a welcome one for pursuing military campaigns. Sure, yeah. Gods and Kings expansion was the most logical and complete execution of religion the series has yet seen. What, does that twice?
Apparently he thinks it happened 3 times, though.
Yeah, that's true. He does think it's happened 3 times.
Let's allowing it better in 5 than 4.
Yes. Allowing it to merge as the separate cultural force that it is, rather than having it act as somebody's form of sub-state diplomacy. Leader screens are some of the most beautiful things PC gaming has ever seen. I would probably disagree, because I've seen games that have much more beautiful stuff in them, but they have very little substance gameplay-wise. Otherwise, but the diplomacy, oh god, the diplomacy. The computer AI in Civ has always been a fickle beast, but the longer you played Civ 5, the more you realized your opponents were absolutely bonkers, and no amount of adjustment or difficulty sliding could fix that.
I'm with you there.
But at number 1, go figure, Civ 4! It was a close run thing. As somebody who plays epic maps to conclusion, the fact that this game had unit stacking makes the end game laborious, and Civ 5's new unit design is a big reason I love it so much. But I just couldn't ignore the fact that, outside of that, this is the perfect Civ game. No wonder Civ 5 has to go making so many radical changes, because it was the only way a proper sequel could be justified. Derp. Even the little touches, the icing on the cake, were the best. Think the Grammy Award-winning theme song or Leonard Nimoy's narration, which peaks with his amazing pig iron intro.
It is pretty amazing.
Sputnik. Sorry. Beep.
Beep.
Beep. Beep. Beep. That doesn't get paid to say beep. And I would suggest it's not Civ 4. He should actually amend this and say Civ 4 BTS, because that's the unfair part of the ranking. He is ranking this at the moment as Civ 4 BTS, as in a completely finished game with a big modding community that's had a lot of time to remod it and make awesome mods, some especially full game complete mods, versus Civ 5, which has only recently had Gods and Kings and the DLL start coming out. So, frankly, he's comparing a completely finished versus the current.
To make the ranking with what he has, though,
yeah.
Not with what will be.
No,
you're going to get more in the near future, apparently, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, no, actually in the comments, and you talked about, you know, the expansion question here. I mean, the only expansion for any Civ title this individual Luke talked about was for Civilization V, specifically in his comments. He may very well have been thinking about the expansions for the other titles, but didn't mention it. And Scandian actually, because a lot of people responded with their own rankings, and he distinguished between with expansions and without expansions. And I would say for myself, there would be very little difference, but there definitely would be a difference. Like, if I'm talking without expansions, then from 5 to 1, for Civ, I'd be the 3rd, the 1st, the 5th, the 2nd, and the 4th. But with the expansions, I would swap Civilization 5 and Civilization 2.
So you'd put Civ 5 at the bottom?
No. With expansions, Civ 3 would still be at the bottom, then the original, then Civ 2, then Civ 5 in 2nd, and Civilization 4 in 1st.
Hmm. Well, with the expansion, yes, it's fully completed Civ 4 again. The one thing I don't really like about his part of what he put Civ 4 on is he basically said Civ 4 is the ultimate in Civilization, and that basically making any other game beyond Civ 4, the only way you could do that was completely destroying the concept of Civ. His idea of the perfect Civ game was Civ 1, but cleaned up, being stuck in what Civ 1 did, or Civ 2 did, or Civ 3 did.
So even though he didn't include it in consideration as ranking, he must have loved Civilization Revolution to bits.
Uh-huh.
Must have. Sure.
Basically, you couldn't make Civ 5 without making some massive changes, because it's the only way you could justify making a sequel. Although, I think a lot of people just wanted Civ 4 updated with graphics, so that speaks to that style, that it should have been just Civ 4 with prettier graphics, or at least that style of thought, and it can't be a Civ game unless it, you know, plays like Civ 4 BTS.
Gotta render all those 3D models in our strategy game.
Durr.
So good.
Although there are things in Civ 5 that are completely missing, missing from Civ 5 that have always been in Civ games, and we've talked about a lot of them. And it is those little things, like the little touches, the icing on the cake, that sort of stuff. Like, you know, wonder videos. I mean, Civ 3, one of the most awesome things in Civ 3 was the fact that when you finished a wonder, it showed you building it, like, complete with scaffolding and all the other stuff. Pretty sure that was Civ 3.
Yeah, that was Civ 3.
I turned it off because of my attention span issues that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I eventually turned it off too, but, yeah, I mean, it was a little detail, but it's way better than a wonder splash screen.
True.
Or like Civilization 2, I mean, we always talk about the High Council in Civ 2, but when you build a wonder in Civ 2, you had the live-action videos. I do remember the wonder videos from Civ 2, both the imagery and the music. That was also a nice touch.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, all the games have various touches. I mean, Civ 5 does feel less Civ-y for those little touches, because there's a lot less of them. But then again, well, we're just not going to get into that. But
yeah.
The game would be a lot more acceptable to most people if those little touches were actually in the game.
You'd think that's something they would have made it a point to keep with all the differences, too.
Yeah. And frankly, you can't give Civ 4 a Grammy Award-winning song as part of its thing. Yes, they used the guy, and he got the Grammy because he was awesome. It has nothing to do with the game other than the fact that they used him.
Music choice is not an insignificant element in the game.
Oh, no,
it
is a little touch, but the winning the Grammy many years later is different.
Not so much.
It didn't.
But you could legitimately alter the game's placements, all of the game's placements, based on their sound and music to some extent. In a strategy game, the actual gameplay is probably the biggest element by a wide margin. But you have other elements, and that can factor in otherwise close games. Could you imagine if it was just, like, people hammering on cinder blocks all game or something? I mean, kind of like the future era in Civ 4?
Sure, why not?
It's just not been an enjoyable experience.
I did crawl through the comments on Kotaku in response to this. More than 100 replies, I managed to find all of 2 that agreed with this person. And the rest were varying degrees of what the?
What the heck is wrong with you, man?
Definitely the most recurring was putting Civilization 2 at the bottom of the list. From Civ 2 is last, oh no, oh hell no. Your pathetic attempts to beg not to be hurt will not save you this time, Plunkett, said Jared Smith.
That's pretty extreme.
Even the more extreme, although maybe not quite as colorful, Sinner-san, who said, you discredit anything you will ever say again as a game reviewer by putting Civ 2 at the bottom of this list, to DamnSkippy2_S, who says, no. Any list with Civ 2 at the bottom is the worst kind of wrong.
Invalid. This list is invalid.
Order should be 24513, damn it, with a special appearance by Alpha Centauri taking a dump on all of them. But a respectful dump, to be sure, being of the same lineage.
That's right.
Okay, imagery, I can't unsee that in my mind. And Paul May said, my mate forwarded this to me because he knows how strongly I feel about Civ 2. I'm going to assume that ranking it last was a smart way to get the article more shares, in which case, well done, objective achieved. Now let's not speak of it again. I actually like what JBS 1958 said. He kind of tried to rise above the fickle fackle. And yes, I said fickle fackle. I believe that the discussion itself was what makes the Civ series so great. Civ has been the most rewarding PC game that has evolved with thought and fun for our modern world. All five and their Sid Meier trials at other formats have been a blast. Sid has been able to supply gaming fun for those thinkers and players who want more than just how fast you can play and destroy and win, to also teach that you can learn during your losses and still interest younger players. Sid has accomplished what many game makers desire, a thoughtful, obsessed fan base that feels a part of the gaming business. Although I would amend what most game makers desire, or maybe more specifically game publishers, is an obsessed fan base that will pay for anything and everything when you slap the title of the next iteration on it. But
Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm. Although, of course, I got to give the last word maybe here to Uridan. It doesn't matter which Civ game you play. Montezuma is always a fuck, right?
Yeah, I was looking at that one.
Yeah. Up yours too, Monty. Up yours too.
Article here. Students at Carnegie Mellon University's Entertainment Technology Center live and breathe video games. But it's not all about making games or playing them. Plenty of intensive work goes into their research. Article is outlining games being used to educate children, I suppose.
No, in this case, they were educating people.
Not children. Cause
children are not people, is what Imagine has just said. That's nice.
Whoa.
All hate mail.
The civilization-relevant portion of this article deals with future tech, as you mentioned, which was initiated by Firaxis. It is a mod of Civilization that creates a new layer that deals with issues related to human trafficking and child labor. Players have to make choices during the game, for example, whether to send children to work in the mines.
Yes.
In the mines! And they learn that there are consequences for doing so. For example, profits go up, so do accidents.
See? Children are not people.
No, they're just miners. Ha.
Miners.
What up, Tom? Yay.
Bad puns win!
I actually really like this idea. And I think there's
child labor and human trafficking.
No, yeah, human trafficking too, actually.
As long as it's profitable.
I mean, Civ 5 doesn't have slavery, so we can have human trafficking. It's perfect.
I mean, I don't see the settlers getting paid out. I guess they do take up gold. I think we'll probably see a lot more games being used for educational purposes in the future. I'm sure, as you guys are probably aware, there's projects out there to use games like Minecraft for teaching kids about architecture and that sort of thing.
And physics, too, right?
And Minecraft physics, yeah, it's very realistic.
Minecraft is to physics what Civ is to history.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I really do think that Civilization, especially, is a great game to teach kids about history because it's all about the what-ifs. If, you know, even the smallest decision by a world leader had been different, could drastically alter the course of history. And, I mean, honestly, I wish that in my history class we had been using interactive teaching tools like video games to learn about various topics in history.
Me too. I wanted to play video games during high school.
I mean, we had the Oregon Trail, you know, and I guess I learned how to ford a river, or how not to ford a river.
Yeah.
We do need more of this in Civ-style series, though. It puts more thought into things you do, rather than just, like, I do this, I get a bunch. And by thought, I mean the standard game theory side of things, ways that other people might react, makes adjustments.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
So Dan linked this article about five things, and four of them are not related to Civilization, but one is. That would be somebody's birthday, namely Sid Meier.
Happy birthday.
But that was like Sunday, February 24th.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago. We're a few weeks late, but happy birthday anyway. 59th, by the way. the guy's title for that little section is, "You're responsible for me wasting too much time on computer, which I thank you for."
Absolutely. Okay.
No, I'm not going to sing Happy Birthday.
So Sid Meier's is still alive and he still has a birthday.
You going to hum it instead?
Mackie has not yet won the sing off.
Mackie's going to hum it instead. Thanks, Mackie.
No.
Chant?
Mm-mm.
Clap?
Nope.
So, this has been episode 168 of Polycast. Hope everyone has enjoyed it. I am the Mian team, and I am always watching. Today we were joined with regular co-hosts Dan Q.
Rank and file.
Makalua.
I'm not sure what Dan meant by that, but okay.
Always watching. Majin.
Making peace by killing enemies.
And guest co-host Andrew.
It's been great being here with you guys.
Record date March 9th, 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.